Well, this morning we're going to take a brief hiatus from our studies in revival and revivalism because I wanted to talk about God's faithful providence to us as a local church, not simply over the last several months, but over the last 31 years of existence as a local church. The reason I decided to do this is because in speaking with a lot of you and sharing the things that God has graciously done in us and for us just over the last few years, more often than not, the response has been, wow, you should tell that story sometime. People would be really encouraged if they actually heard enumerated all of the things that God has done for us as a local church. And I agreed, and so here we are this morning. Now, just so you know, I don't really plan to spend a lot of time talking about the earliest days of this church, because quite frankly, I'm not that familiar with the earliest days. I don't think there are any members still here among us who remember the earliest days of the church. I think the earliest we have would be the Avaloses, Josue and Freddie, and they got here in 92. But aside from that, I think Steve and Debbie were in 94. Is that right? Me and Dana were in 96. So we're about the oldest surviving members of the original Free Grace Baptist Church. And so whatever happened before that is kind of a mystery. I mean, we all heard certain people mention the early days beginning in 1989. But much of that is a mystery. But let me just share with you what I do know. I do know that this church actually began as a Spanish-speaking ministry in 1989. Pastor Ken Billings and his wife, Debbie, served as missionaries in southern Mexico for a number of years before moving, actually not here, but they moved to the Bay Area of California. And in California, the Billings attended Sovereign Grace Baptist Church of Silicon Valley, which is in Morgan Hill, pastored by Bill Downing. After a brief time there, they moved to San Antonio, where they first came to Community Baptist Church in Elmendorf. If you don't know where Elmendorf is, just go through China Grove. Don't know where China Grove is? The Doobie Brothers wrote a song about it. It's actually the actual place. China Grove is on the south side of San Antonio, southeast side of San Antonio, just off of Loop 1604. And they started there at Community Baptist Church, where Pat Horner was the pastor. And they stayed there for quite some time, not a huge amount of time. But when they left Community Baptist to start this work, they named the church Free Grace Baptist Church, and we changed the name sometime. Well, it's been fairly recently when we underwent a name change. I'll talk more about that in just a minute. But anyway, like most fledgling churches, Free Grace began as a really small gathering of believers who met in various locations for a time until they settled down. I think the first permanent home was in Balcones Heights. They were meeting at a community center. Fire station. Maybe the community center was the fire station. I asked Josue this morning. He's like, I don't really remember. I think it was two different places. Whether the community center was first and then the fire station, or the fire station and then the community, I don't know. Steve, do you know?
They were close.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Good. We'll just chalk that up to not knowing. As Providence would have it, it wasn't long before Ken and Debbie realized that they were actually seeing more non-Spanish speakers come to the church than Spanish speakers. And so they actually changed their ministry over to an English-speaking ministry. When Dan and I came to Free Grace in 1996, the church was meeting in a rented portable building behind Village Parkway Baptist Church on Calabria Road. I can still remember our kids asking, why can't we go to the big church? You know, we would go to this massive church. If you've ever seen Village Parkway, it is a huge church. And we would go to the church and we'd pull in the parking lot. I remember the first time we did that, Chris was like, wow, you know, that's a huge church, Dad. Well done. And we pull up behind this little portable that, by the way, the floor is leaning this way. And we walked in. Actually, we bounced in because the floors gave every time you walked across them. And that's really the first time we saw Josue and Freddie and Steve and Debbie and Ken and Debbie as well. And we met there in this little portable building, about 25, 30 people, 40 maybe, meeting in this little building, all crammed together. And we met there for a considerable amount of time. You know, it was really hard to explain to children why we weren't meeting in the big church. It's really hard to convince them that, well, they're not Calvinistic, you know. But they were gracious to us, very gracious, as a matter of fact. The pastor himself was a Calvinist, but he had just not brought his congregation along. And besides, we just told all the kids, we're trying to build a church that we can call our own and move off and see what the Lord does with that. So that was fairly easy from that point on. In fact, the church had purchased a piece of land and was planning to build on that piece of land, but because of easement issues and, of course, funding problems, nothing ever happened on that particular front. In 1998, I believe it was 1998, the church building on Thorain Avenue, which had been the home to a primitive Baptist church since the late 60s, came up for sale. And this is where God's providence really seemed to become much more evident to us as a local church. Again, as a church of approximately 30, 40 members, we really had very little means to purchase a building of our own. So we began to pray and ask other like-minded churches across the country to join us as we awaited God's unfolding plan. Again, this church was available. We had no funds to purchase it. But within, I would say, a very short period of time, a church in Chambersburg, Pennsylvania, actually came along and said, look, we have $80,000 that we're just sitting on. We had planned to build with it, but our plans have been put on hold indefinitely, and we would love for you to have the money. It was a loan, interest-free, and it was to be paid back in the years subsequent to that. As Providence would have it, though, we had a captain in the Air Force in our congregation who got orders to the Pentagon. And he was also not only a captain in the Air Force, he was a very shrewd investor. And so when he left, his gift to the church was to pay the building off. So he paid the building off, and we owned the building outright from that point forward. Now, I'd like to say that the next several years were good years for what was still Free Grace Baptist Church, but that would not be the case. In 2006, I was made aware of the need for a church to be planted in New Braunfels and San Marcos in that area. And so Dan and I bought a house in New Braunfels. That's how we ended up in New Braunfels. We went there in 2006, planted a church downtown in New Braunfels. In fact, that's where we met Sean and Laney. Sean and Laney showed up for the first time there as we were renting the auditorium at New Braunfels High School. Go Unicorns. We enjoyed a really sweet time of fellowship and growth almost immediately. We started growing. We eventually moved out of the auditorium. We moved into what is now the Phoenix Saloon in New Braunfels. It was then the Presto Print Shop, I believe is what it was called. And we had the whole second floor almost of that building. It's a historical building right downtown. You can't miss it. And we, again, enjoyed a good time of sweet fellowship and learning and growing. Well, again, as Providence would have it, Ken Billings was undergoing treatment for hepatitis C. Ken Billings was actually one of the first people to receive some of the drugs that are now responsible for curing hepatitis C in most patients. He was among the first people in the country to actually be cured of hepatitis C. The problem was the drugs nearly killed him. These were mega doses of interferon-type drugs that literally took all of his white blood cells and in the process of killing off the hepatitis C, killed most of those as well. He couldn't walk sometimes 5 feet without being winded, much less stand in the pulpit and preach as faithfully as he had done for so many years. During the time we were in New Braunfels, this church became infiltrated by a wolf, a man who wormed his way into the ministry and then systematically began to divide the church through lies, deceit, shameless self-promotion. So Ken's dealing with hepatitis C, all these really strange side effects of the drugs nearly killing him. Now he's got a heretic in the midst, and this guy is systematically dividing the church. I got a call in 2008, which is interesting in and of itself. In 2008, our lease was up on the building there in New Braunfels. Our membership had begun to deteriorate, not because of disgruntled parishioners, not because of any error being taught or anything of that nature, but we had people leaving for jobs elsewhere. We had people finding churches in San Antonio. We actually ended up having more people from San Antonio attending our church than from San Marcos and New Braunfels. So in 2 years, with Ken going through all this, with the church here going through all the problems that it was going through, it was suggested that we merge our churches, that the people from New Braunfels come back to San Antonio and assist with the ministry here, given all that had happened during our absence. So after 2 years in New Braunfels, I decided it was time to come back and see what could be done to preserve the ministry here, a ministry that we all knew was a salvageable work. In 2008, like I said, I was brought back on as an elder, and along with Ken's son, Kenny, we began to take some of the teaching load off of a very sick Pastor Ken. And we all lived happily ever after, right? And that's what got us to where we are today. No. I'm not going to get into all the details, but shortly after our return, it was clear that something was happening to Ken beyond the hepatitis C treatments. Once a very formidable theologian, a very dynamic preacher, Ken was now just going through the motions. He was preaching, you know, largely in a monotone voice, preaching with little true conviction, becoming less and less cohesive in his preparation and presentation. And during this time, as you can imagine, visitors stopped coming. Members either became sporadic in their attendance or dropped out altogether. I remember some of the prayer meetings on Wednesday nights would be just us, the McConnells, and the Avaloses. That was it. Sometimes we had less than 10 people at prayer meeting on a Wednesday night. Sunday afternoons on our drive home, Dana would often ask me, you know, is it just me, or, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but are Ken's messages getting worse and worse? I mean, did that make sense to you? And of course the answer was no. It got so bad at one point, and because of his excellent track record up to that point, his wife Debbie said, we need to go see a doctor. And they went and saw a doctor. The doctor confirmed our earlier suspicions. Long story short, Ken had an MRI that revealed that a considerable portion of his frontal lobe had deteriorated, was gone. There was nothing on the x-ray but a black spot where the front of his brain should have been. Which is really a testimony to the grace of God, because he was still able to communicate effectively, able to, you know, in his own way, still stand and deliver the word of God, although it was really difficult to understand. We now had a reason. We knew that unless we intervened, the church would die. That's how close it came to dying. I mean, some of us, even as members, were thinking to ourselves, and we didn't realize this till much later, but we were thinking to ourselves, it's probably time to leave. I was pastoring here. And Dan and I would have these conversations, and it was like, we need to go somewhere because this is not working out. And bear in mind, Ken was so well entrenched and so well loved that it was nearly impossible to do anything, to even think about asking him to step down. And I know that sounds silly. You had to have been there, right, guys? I mean, you had to have been there in the thick of it to know what the dynamics were. And one Sunday, Ken's daughter, Teresa, came visiting from Arkansas. She sat under the preaching for about 5 minutes and then went outside. And I went out and found her bawling her eyes out on the front porch. And I said, Teresa, what's wrong? And she said, what has happened to my father? What's happened to him? I think it was only days after that that I did the hardest thing I've ever had to do in my life, which is to ask my beloved brother in Christ to leave the ministry. Most excruciating thing I've ever had to do. And if you knew the dynamic that Ken and I had, you would know how difficult that was. We were best friends. We were confidants. We worked very well together for a number of years. It was difficult. One of the obstacles, of course, was Debbie. We didn't want to see her, fall by the wayside. They had no plans. They had no reserves. They had nowhere to go, which is really another testament to the providence of God and the goodness of God's people in this place. For a few years after they left, this church paid Ken's salary while they were paying me. I say they, you, right? And again, that's a testimony not only to God's grace and provision, but it's a testimony to how the people of this church have always risen up when it comes to doing the hard things and doing what's necessary. Another hard thing for us was that when I came on board full time in 2012, wasn't long after that we began to rebuild and recuperate a bit. And between 2012 and 2018, the church grew. It was becoming obvious that we were quickly outgrowing our building. During this time, we also changed the name of the church. Some of you were here. Were you here? If you were here during the name change, raise your hand. Okay, good. I don't have to explain all that. Free grace is not a widely accepted term in theological circles these days because there's a movement called the Free Grace Movement that has really hijacked that phrase, sadly, and they're a bunch of heretics preaching that it's possible to be saved and not even know it. It's possible to be saved and just send your life away and you're still saved because you said the prayer. That's the free grace they're talking about. And every conference I'd go to, people would say, oh, Free Grace Baptist Church. They'd look at my name tag. Are you part of that? It's almost like I had to wear a sign on my back saying, no, I'm not part of that movement, right? So we changed the name to Grace Baptist Church. Now, this is where things get really interesting from the standpoint of God's providence. We had tried to get a realtor. We had been tossing around the idea, let's just sell this building. We're outgrowing it. We've got, the funds coming in. Let's just sell the building and see what happens. Well, there were a couple of problems with that. First of all, realtors had appraised our building at like $175,000 to $200,000. That wasn't going to get us anywhere, right, in terms of building or securing another location. But the realtor we hired, Jason was his name. Jason's kind of crazy. In a good way. Jason came to our office one day, sat down in the chair across from me, and he said, let's put the building on the market for $380,000. And we laughed. We said, yeah, okay. Yeah, it's like, throwing wet toilet paper on the wall to see if it sticks. Okay, Jason. Well, he threw the toilet paper on the wall, and it stuck. And in October of 2018, we received a cash offer of $335,000 on a building that's worth every bit of $180,000. Short time later, the building was sold. We needed a place to meet. I knew that Grace Community Church had met at Mark's Outing. Anybody remember those days? It wasn't that too long ago, but Mark's Outing was a little burger joint that could only hold about 80 people. We filled it up on our first Lord's Day there. And great hamburgers, by the way. I'm going to make a shameless plug for Mark's Outing. It's over on Commerce Street, right outside of 37. Great hamburgers. Closed on Sunday, which is why we were able to meet there. But we had about 80 people able to be fit together in that building. And it wasn't long before we outgrew that. Well, at that particular time, it just so happened that we had a visitor. His name was Henry Bunn. Remember Henry? Henry was with us for only a little period of time before moving on to Fort Worth to go to seminary and to get married. But while he was here, and I believe the only reason Henry was sent here was to point us where we're to go next. Because Henry, just out of the blue, said, you know, I know people. And I know the guy, Gabe, at the Baptist University of the Americas. And I think I could talk to him and we could probably meet there. Henry worked that deal out in conjunction with John. And before long, we were meeting in the BUA. And almost immediately, Henry left. Almost like entertaining angels unawares, right? He comes in, go there, and then he leaves. Henry, if you're listening to this, you're not as angelic as all that, but take the compliment for what it's worth. No, Henry's a great guy. Great guy. Well, in addition to the money that we got from the sale of our church, in October of 2019, we closed on a nearly 3-acre piece of land in Live Oak. And we hope to build a church there. In April 2020, we had a work day where we cleared a path for the survey trucks to cross the property. Architects were hired. Plans were moving ahead. And with the exception of constant interference from the not-so-friendly HOA, it looked like we were going to be able to build there. But once again, Providence intervened. As it turned out, in addition to the money that we had already spent getting all the preliminary things done, a 6,000 square foot building was going to cost us $1.2 million for 6,000 square feet. Unknown to John at the time, who was up to his eyeballs in red tape, meeting with the architect, going to city council meetings, meeting with the Live Oak fire chief, meeting with Gladys, the HOA lady, and trying to soothe her ruffled feathers and so on. It was horrible. Some of us began putting feelers out for other places. I remember telling John that I'd begun looking at other ways of finding us a home, which meant that we would need to sell our plot of land. He didn't want anything to do with it. And rightfully so. Remember, John is going to all these meetings. He's making all these plans. He's got all these dreams, you know, visions of sugar plums in his head every night. You know, he's got all the, you know, Steve had done these wonderful drawings where you could actually walk in the building and look around in the building. I don't know how he did that, but it's, you know, kind of cosmic. And so I come and I say, John, I think we need to change directions here. He's like, yeah, what you talking about, Willis? Change directions? He didn't want anything to do with it. We'd come too far in the process, which was true. And both of us doubted that we'd be able to sell our land. Remember the pandemic's beginning. We're sitting on a piece of land that nobody had wanted for years, that had gone undeveloped for its whole existence. And we had the problem now of having to sell our land. Kind of sounds insurmountable, right? But again, the Lord had other plans. In December of 2020, the day after Christmas, to be exact, Lainey James sent me an email. And she says, look at this one I found. She said, it's a little pricey. And it was like $985,000 pricey. down from 1.2 million. She said, it's a little pricey, but just wanted to throw it out there, let you guys look at it and mull it over. We came to look at the building about a week later. That's when we learned that the price was, had been $1.2 million. So actually, any hope of buying the building, we were in the same boat. You know, we're like, no, we can't afford $1.2 million to build on the property. We certainly can't afford $1.2 million to buy a church that's going to require $500,000 to get it fixed back up. Well, again, the Lord had different plans. We sat out in the parking lot, and I think it was just me and Dana, Steve and Debbie, Josue and Sharon, Sammy. We're all sitting out there on the tailgate of my truck waiting for John. John's still in here talking to the owners. And we're sitting out there. We're all ready to go. I think we were going to try to go eat somewhere or something. We're all sitting out there enjoying the fellowship. We had already resigned ourselves to the fact that there's no way. The building's too big. There's too much work to be done. It costs too much. What is John doing? So I came into the building just to see what John was doing. And I sat right back there on the back pew. And for some reason, I don't know actually, well, I do know now why this happened. The investors were telling this sob story about how they're spending $2,500 a month to pay the taxes on this building. They were bleeding out. It was really affecting their bottom line. They had had the church for a while, and they were, you know, spending all this money. And for some reason, I just blurted out, well, you're not going to get $985,000 for this place. As sure as, I mean, with all the conviction that I could say anything, I said that, and the investor just looked at me like I'd insulted him, which I had. Because veiled in that statement was kind of, you're crazy, right? Couldn't help myself. But if you'd seen this building the day we saw it, no. No, I mean, $985,000 down from $1.2 million? No. So he said, he kind of came back at me. He said, so what do you think is a reasonable price? And Steve and I out in the parking lot had already been talking about $650 tops. That's all I'd pay for this building. And that's lowballing the guy, for sure. But again, me being me, I said, I wouldn't pay more than $650,000 for it. Then we told him about our property in Live Oak and suggested that we could perhaps do some kind of trade with them. You know, our property plus a couple of hundred thousand. But that didn't really materialize into anything. What did happen, however, still boggles the mind in terms of God's providence. You know, we talk about God's providence. We experience the providence of God, but when are we ever going to understand that He is faithful? When are we ever going to get it through our thick skulls that He blesses His children in ways that we can't even imagine? $650,000, I thought, okay, Dana, let's go home and the search will resume. As a matter of fact, I think Lainey kept sending me properties to look at. You know, she was bird dogging this whole thing because she, you remember LoopNet, right? I think. Yeah, she was on LoopNet and some really nice properties, but this one just kind of stuck in our craw. And I thought, well, I offered them $650,000. Maybe they'll take it. And we laughed. Well, in less than 2 weeks, not only did the sellers agree to pay to the $650,000 purchase price, but I received an email the same day from a realtor who had offered to buy our land in Live Oak 7 months earlier. But I told him very confidently, we're going to build on that land. If you want it, you're going to have to pay us $500,000 for it. We paid $239,699.94 for that piece of land. We hoped that we might be able to get $220,000, $230,000, especially in a COVID market when everybody's abandoning their properties rather than selling their properties or buying other properties. The exact email on January the 11th, 2021 read like this. Good morning, Tim. I was circling back on this property to see if the church was still going to develop on the site. There is still an interest from my client in the property in the event that you would consider selling. We bought it for $239. They bought it without hesitation for $275. Which almost compensated for everything we'd spent getting the land ready to build on it. Again, you talk about the goodness of God. On that same day, which is more than coincidental, folks. These aren't coincidences. This is God's providence in action. On that same day, we got a pre-approval letter from Techstar Bank saying, we'll give you whatever you need for that building. Mind you, we have no credit. We have no credit history. We're not even yet an LLC. We're just a bunch of guys and gals wanting to buy a church building. There's no way that we should have been approved for any loan of any amount. Then you got David Mullinax back there who happens to know this guy at the bank. And we get a pre-approval letter almost immediately. We paid for half the building, financed the rest, leaving us enough money in the account to make the renovations we've made thus far and to have 1 year's worth of payments in the bank to ensure that we wouldn't miss a beat. As it stands now, with all the renovations done, the Bexar County Appraisal District, the guy who looked at our building prior to the improvements being made, he said, if you'll just put a roof on this place and weather it in, you're looking at $1.2 to $1.6 million in value. We owe a little over $300 for it. The bank is salivating, right? The bank's like, please, please miss a payment. You know? Would you not like to have a $300,000 in something and be able to make $1.2 million off of it? Overnight? I would, right? With San Antonio's gentrification project expanding in this direction, and it is, we're looking at even more value than that in the coming years. Now, let me be clear on this because I don't want to be misunderstood. I'm not standing here touting how good we are at investing. I'm not standing up here saying, folks, we've made a good investment. It's all about the money. It's not. What I want you to understand about all of this is that God's hand of providence throughout this time has been undeniable. Almost absurdly undeniable. Let me give you just a few more examples. When we started seeking bids for renovations in this place, every project that we threw out there had a $30,000 price tag. I don't care what it was. You know, if we need the floors done, how much is that going to be? $30,000. We need all the cracks fixed. We need interior and exterior. How much is that going to cost? $30,000. Asbestos abatement, $30,000. Everything was $30,000. Until God stepped in. The cracks on the interior and exterior, the $30,000 price tag for it was $18,000, I believe, for the cracks on the inside and outside. A little under $4,000. The $30,000 flooring, which includes a layer of half-inch plywood underneath the flooring that you see now, was going to cost $30,000. We got it done for $20,000. Total estimate for roofing was $70,000. We got it done for $20,000. Repairing and or replacing the air conditioning throughout the building was originally estimated to cost us close to $80,000. We ended up paying nearly half that. When it came to acquiring things like furniture and appliances, we had nothing to put in the building. It just so happened that Debbie McConnell's brother is in a church in Dallas and they're remodeling and rebuilding. Hey, we got a bunch of stuff. They sent a catalog of all the stuff they had. If you want it, come and get it for free. We got tens of thousands of dollars worth of stuff for the price of a U-Haul truck and a couple of tanks of gas. Is that not God's providence? Are not all the signs pointing to the fact that, yeah, this was a good thing. The Lord opened all the doors. And let me just reassure you with this. Had all these doors not opened preliminarily, we never would have moved in this building. We were all against it. Steve and I would talk loudly and longly with each other. We're not going to get that building. It'll be an albatross hung around our necks. We can't do it. But what we can't do, God is more than capable of doing. They came back from Dallas with couches, tables, chairs, shelving, TVs, a stove, a dishwasher, a sound system. And again, it was all free. And here's the thing, all of this happened, everything I've said up to this point happened during a pandemic. And now let me share with you what is, without a doubt, the most meaningful of God's providences throughout this effort. You. Providentially, the Lord has seen fit to give us more than our fair share of willing hearts. More than our fair share of trades. We have electricians, plumbers, woodworkers, painters, carpenters, people who aren't afraid of heights. Thanks, David. You should have seen John and I looking at that scissors lift. We were really brave until he got here. John got on the scissors lift and he raised it about 10 feet. His knees were knocking like this and he, no, came immediately down. David! And David Rockamontes is up there, you know, swinging from the rafters like an ape with not a care in the world. And took care of that for us. We got people with green thumbs. People who aren't afraid to get their hands dirty, who make sure this place is clean and presentable. God has given us exactly the right combination of gifts, talents, and willing hearts to accomplish things that would have taken infinitely more time and money than we have. And without fail, when a need arises, someone is there to meet it. Be thankful not only for God's providence of brick and mortar and wood and things like that. Be thankful for the work that He does in the hearts of His people to incline them to do things that they don't want to do, that they never imagined themselves doing, and then giving them the stick-to-itiveness to continue serving in those areas. All the while without complaining, without murmuring. Again, most of us came into this building with doubts about how it could all be done. We were more than intimidated by the immensity of it all. But throughout, God's providence has been there at every turn. And we hope to see the same in the coming days, weeks, months, and years. The only question that remains is this. Now that we're here, what are we going to make of all this providence? Sadly, it's our natural inclination at some point to stop and say, okay, that was wonderful. That was amazing. And we just chalk it up as a season of God's providence and here we are and thank the Lord for it, but it's time to rest. It's time to let our guard down. It's time to simply sit back and enjoy the fruits of our labors. But let me just challenge you this morning not to be content with the status quo. Let me just challenge you to realize that the Lord's providence isn't normally so clearly and undisputably displayed unless He intends for us to do something with it. We've been placed in this church for a reason. We've been brought to this neighborhood for a reason. And what reason is that? We've been put here to be salt and light. We've been put here to be heralds of the gospel. We've been put here to love the neighbors around us and give them the gospel, invite them to join us so that they too might come to know the Lord and come to grow in all of His grace and all of His providences that we've seen so richly displayed over the last couple of years. We've been placed here because, by all accounts, this is an area that needs a solid church. Where the truth is preached and where her people are unafraid to go out and make the name of Christ known throughout the neighborhood. I don't know what the Lord has in store for us in this place. But I know that He often provides in the way that He's provided for us as both a test of our gratitude and a test of our willingness to act upon all that He's done. This is not time to relax. It's not time to let our guard down. It's a time for action. It's a time to honor and glorify the Lord who has brought us by being doers of His Word and not hearers only. Sure, there are tons of things left to do. There are tons of things left to complain about. Much in the same way that the children of Israel complained in the wilderness that they wanted to go back where they were from and not look forward to the promised land. Be careful, as we say in the South, that you don't look a gift horse in the mouth. Be careful that you don't take for granted the providence of God thus far by marking all the things that yet need to be done. Look at this. Look at where God has brought us from the humble beginnings in a community center in Balcones Heights 31 years ago to now. Look how He's faithfully equipping us week in and week out with His Word. Look how He's giving us the gifts that are necessary to make sure that the dissemination of the gospel is something that goes on uninterrupted. Look at all the space we have here to do things that are meaningful for the kingdom and cause of Christ. That truly make a difference in terms of impacting the community in which He has so lovingly and graciously placed us. Unless you were watching the sausage being made, I don't think any of you can truly realize just how seriously we were against this place. We tried everything we could to find a reason not to come here. We would throw up those $30,000 estimates. And, you know, David and John and I, you know, in particular, we'd sit around and talk and we'd be like, oh, you know, you add up those $30,000 things and you can't get but this many done. That's not enough. And then the Lord said, okay. Okay, just sit still. Pray. Trust me. And 30,000 becomes 4,000. The original estimate to get the cracks fixed in this auditorium alone, this sanctuary, was $9,000. But then it just so happened that a guy needing work for his crew just happened to find us. John, how did he find us? He just so happened to find us. Yeah, lives in the neighborhood, comes in, looks around. $1,000 cash. $1,000? To do $9,000 worth of work? Yeah, my crew needs the work. Do what? Yeah, that's an angel on the words. I doubt we don't even know his name. I don't think. John May. Matthew. We laugh, but isn't that just like God? Is it going to be either Matthew, Mark, Luke, or John? I say instead of letting our guard down, instead of becoming complacent, instead of complaining, let's just praise the Lord together. for where we're at. And you know the beauty of it? Going back to the whole financial side of it, because I know a lot of people run easy about the finances and stuff. You know, we formed into an LLC, which means we're a limited liability corporation. And part of that limited liability is, if this church, by some dark, unexpected, demonic providence, would have to close its doors, you know who would be on the hook for paying the balance? None of us. None of us. The corporation is dissolved. The proceeds come from the bank's ability to sell the building, which again, I've already given you the appraisal. The church as a corporation would stand to actually gain much more than we've ever put into the building, should that happen. It's not going to happen, at least over my dead body, from my lips to God's ears, right? But let's rejoice in what He's given us. Let's praise the Lord for that. Let's work on the things that still need work, yes. But let's do it with joyful hearts, not with grudging hearts. Let's give, and let's continue to give more so that we can continue doing the things. But not, again, with grudging hearts. Let's do it joyfully. We've, you know, in terms of churches our size, we've kind of been brought to close to the promised land. This is our forever home. Let's make the most of it. And let's make sure that God gets the utmost in glory for what He has done. Amen? Amen.